south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, here's a little offbeat proof that the gringo advantage really does exist. McDonald's has flooded the market here in Latin America. It's everywhere. And you know, in the business areas of Latin cities, where there are McDonald's, like I said, they're everywhere, you can walk in and often see little business meetings going on. I guess it's a place where a lot of people with scruffy offices would rather meet. Though in the mornings especially, you will see small gatherings of guys in white shirts and ties and ladies in their business outfits, briefcases, laptops, and all. Nope, not a likely scenario at your local McDonald's up in Cleveland. In the States, if you had a high-powered business meeting in McDonald's, well, people would laugh at you. But such is the gringo advantage. Even McDonald's has a certain level of respectability as a business meeting place. And here's the point. Down here, well off the gringo tourist trail, those people having those little meetings in McDonald's are all Latins and Latinas, of course. Not a gringo to be found. But get this. If you, as a gringo down here, are involved in some kind of business deal and you need to call a meeting, guess what? When the meeting's to be held outside of a professional office, like your lawyer's office or an architect's office, because you're a gringo, they won't settle on McDonald's, no. They'll pick what they consider a much fancier, high-end location. And if there's a Starbucks within 10 miles, that's where you'll probably end up going. Nope, not your choice, theirs. So, to impress the lone gringo, it'll be Starbucks or maybe even IHOP. I kid you not, but more on that later. So again, it's let's impress the gringo. Let's go to Starbucks and show them we're thoroughly gringo-ized too. So if you want to eavesdrop on some high-end business deals going down, just go to the nearest Starbucks on a weekday in the a.m. And by the way, just the other day I was at such a meeting and there were two of us gringos present. Where do you think the other guy's lawyer wanted to have the meeting? Starbucks. And by the way, right across the street was a local Latin coffee spot. Kind of like a Starbucks clone, though lacking in certain details, as are most Latin establishments. Anyway, at the sweets and pastry counter at Starbucks, I noticed they had brownies for $5 each. In the local funny money, of course. Whereas at the coffee shop across the street, they had the very same brownies for $2. That's why when gringos say, Johnny, how can those Starbucks in Latin America pay the rent, much less the help, when the place is never filled? Not even half filled or a quarter filled. Sometimes there's only four, maybe six people in the whole place for hours. Well, that's easy. Figure it out. All they got to do is sell three of those brownies at $5 apiece. And that $15 will cover a whole day's salary for a Starbucks worker. Being that in 17 out of the 20 Latin American countries, the average minimum wage for the day is between $12 and $15. So there you have it. Sell three brownies at Starbucks and you can have a full-time employee on a shift. And in some Latin countries, have a couple of bucks left over to stuff your own pocket. Oh, and by the way, for those of you tourists and fresh gringo expats coming down to Latin America, if you want to see those bodyguard brigades that I'm always talking about, just go to a Starbucks and check out the parking lot. So, while the pretentious asses they're supposed to be guarding are in the Starbucks showing off Rolexes, Nike joggers, and iPhones, the bodyguards with their sunglasses, broken earbuds, and badly tailored Sears suits are standing outside sucking in their guts, each trying to look more important than the other bodyguards in the parking lot. So, if you're anything like me and you're interested in the occasionally ridiculous, there are a number of transplanted gringo franchises where you're bound to see bodyguards strutting around those parking lots. But to me, and a lot of expats, one of the most surprising effects of the gringo advantage is that wealthy Latins with bodyguards have turned the IHOP into some kind of exclusive hangout. Yep, you heard me, the IHOP. Yes, down here at the International House of Pinheads, you'll get a glimpse of the local hoi polloi, and of course, their bodyguards. And you know what? That's when the reality of the gringo advantage will really sink in. Those gringo hallelujah moments come when you see things like that, and that's why you have to get your boots on the ground. In fact, I think the guy who first brought the IHOP franchise down to Latin America had no idea it would ever rise above its reputation in the U.S. as a kind of a highway truck stop breakfast dive. Anyway, if you get boots on the ground and you see what's happening with IHOPs down here, by the way, they're only seen in expensive neighborhoods and very high-end malls. That's when you just might consider bringing that first White Castle or Denny's franchise down. Nope, you can't make this stuff up. Okay, changing gears a bit, I'd like to thank Jane Galt for cluing me into this next story. Now, it hasn't been widely reported at all, but on December 5th, last Saturday, the busiest airport in Latin America, that would be Tucumán Airport in Panama, stopped its operations for a couple hours, halted all flights, etc., and the people were all evacuated. And why do you think they would pull such a drastic measure? Had to be something extremely serious, right? Was it terrorism? No. Technology failure? No. A disabled plane coming in for emergency landing? No. Earthquake? Hurricane? A power outage maybe? Nope. If you can guess why, you're truly clairvoyant. The article says, suddenly, without warning, in the main control tower and other areas of Tucumán International Airport, there was a surprise invasion of tens of thousands of crickets, beetles, and yes, cucarachas. That would be cockroaches. Yuck. Not only that, the report says all classes of insects began to drop from the ceilings and the vents in the installation. People at their computers and terminals were in shock as suddenly they were covered in insects. And so the airport was closed down and evacuated to bring in fumigation specialists. Meanwhile, the airport spokesperson said, "At no time were airport personnel or visitors in danger, nor were aircraft taking off or landing at risk." He said his airport personnel acted with complete professionalism at all times. Yeah, right, it's me again. Sounds like his professional maintenance guys were acting in their highest capacity too, huh? Then it goes on to say, according to the airport director Alfredo Fonseca Mora, the insects had infested dead-end spaces and air conditioning ducts. Okay, so what that basically means for us expats and gringos is the next time you're passing through Tucumán Airport in Panama, skip the food court, bring a sack lunch. Okay, and speaking of Panama, lots of people want to know about Panama because they think, well, that just might be the place they want to become expats. Well, here's some news that just might dissuade you of that notion. Now, you've all heard of Airbnb, right? That's when you get on the internet and you hook up with someone who's got an apartment or a room to rent at your final destination. Seems to work out pretty good for a lot of people. I've known many who've done it. However, because that's a personal deal between you and the person who owns the apartment or the rental, that rightly cuts the government tax people out of the equation. And the Weasley government parasites know that, so they're trying to crack down on such things. And guess what? Panama is right there in the lead. Why? Because it's a tourist destination and the government feels it's losing a lot of tax revenue on Airbnbs that aren't registered. Now, you know, most tourist destinations in the world have a tourism tax, and Panama calls it a lodging tax, which now is 10%, but it's supposed to go up to, get this, 14% if Congress has their way next year. And that's above and beyond the 7% VAT or sales tax on everything. So if you use Airbnb in Panama, the government gets cut out for that amount. Yep, you gotta love those private Airbnb folks. Anyway, because Panama's government is growing like a cancer and the hotel sector is vastly overbuilt and losing money hand over fist, that means the government's 10% so-called lodging tax revenues are way down. So who do they want to go after? The mom-and-pop Airbnb people, of course. What do they propose on doing about it? Well, they're drafting a law right now which aims to create tougher sanctions for those renting homes to tourists. Why? Because almost no one in the Airbnb business pays that 10% tax. Why should they, right? Whether they pay it or not, they get nothing from the government in return. Same old story, right? According to Article 21 of Law 80, there's a fine of between $5,000 to $50,000 if you fail to report a tenant and pay that tax. And in actuality, that law has been in effect since 2012. But since Latin American countries are very good at passing laws and very bad at enforcement, in all that time, that's what, 4 years now, only 49 cases were opened against so-called clandestine accommodation services, i.e. Airbnbs. And as for how many mom-and-pop B&Bs have actually paid a fine, so far, get this, zero. Which is why the latest legislation creates a Nazi Big Brother Airbnb Enforcement Bureau. Now, according to the spokesperson for the Panama Tourism Authority, he says, "We are finally creating more energetic mechanisms to spot and sanction offenders." He says in the past, the process was ambiguous, but now that we have methods to find unregistered persons in such apartments, we can immediately start the legal process against the owner. Wow, that's me saying wow. I guess what that means is if you're caught in an Airbnb, one that's not registered with the government or not consistently paying that 10% lodging tax, they'll grab the renter, haul him into court as proof that the law was evaded. That should make for an interesting, adventurous vacation, huh? Under the threat of what might be house arrest. Just hope they have English translators in Panama Bed and Breakfast Court. Now, remember, down here in Latin America, if you bring a case to court, it takes months, sometimes years. I wonder how they'll handle that when they start nabbing Airbnb tourists. Oh, and by the way, how do you know your Airbnb is paying that 10% lodging tax? Even if the owner shows you an official plaque on the wall that he's registered with the government, how do you know for sure if you don't speak Spanish? That said, Panama, like Costa Rica, is not looking too good as a permanent expat destination now, is it? So if you're thinking about Panama, what might your reasons be? Maybe it's that generous pensionado program you've heard about, but guess what? Most other Latin American pensionado programs are similar in that respect. So then you might say, well, they use the U.S. dollar. Yeah, that's true, but it's funny money just the same. And remember, with so many gringo tourists and businessmen spending those dollars, the cost of living is much higher than adjacent Latin countries, except, of course, Costa Rica. Then there's people who say, hey, well, if you're in Panama City or Cologne, a lot of people speak English, probably one out of every five. Well, you know, that's probably because one out of five people in the big city are tourists. So what does that really mean? For starters, too many gringos trying to turn it into a tropical suburb of Cleveland. And while we're talking about Panama, you remember in the last show or two, I spoke about a huge hotel bubble. How you can book online for $100, $125, $150, $175 and come down, walk right into the same four-star hotels and pay $50 at the desk. Guess what? There's more news on the exploding Panama hotel real estate bubble. This time we have a rather big hotel conglomerate called RG Hotels Panama, who in October 2015 filed for bankruptcy, and now many, many people, including thousands of absentee gringos, have been left holding the bag. It says holders of properties and security issues of SG Hotel Investments Panama, who bought apartments to live in or as investments, have found themselves in a legal catch-22 as a result of a large-scale failure of a residential tourism project of huge proportions on Panama's Pacific coast. The article goes on to say, Antonio Bonilla, the visible face of the foreign investors group behind RG Hotels and his lawyers, said yesterday that the company they bought was a house of cards with false information in its financial statements and extremely overvalued properties. This, according to the owners of the hotel group, who have voluntarily filed for bankruptcy, will also affect adjacent properties down the Pacific coastline. Then it says, this complex process of bankruptcy on the part of RG Hotels and Casa de Campo Farallón has uncovered a massive web of frauds and scams. And get this, it says, investors, mostly North Americans who bought bonds and negotiable commercial titles, have entered into a minefield. Not to mention, it says, owners of apartments on the beach condo hotel called Pearls, developed by Archie Hotels, revealed that after years of occupying their properties, that's some 800 people, some have not yet received their deeds confirming ownership of their properties. The apartments were bought at the original cost of between $200,000 and $800,000, nearly all of them by North Americans. And it goes on to say, since the company has entered bankruptcy proceedings, none of the utilities work, including electricity, meaning presently the units are uninhabitable and fast deteriorating. And then it says, one holiday real estate company called Blue Vacations has sold at least 800 holiday packages that now can never be redeemed. Okay, so there's a little lesson on why you should stay away from real estate deals in Latin America, not only because there's a huge real estate bubble looming, But worse yet, there's a lot of slick fraudsters out there ready and willing to rip off a first world gringo looking for that little piece of paradise. And believe it or not, a lot of those slick fraudsters are gringos who've been down a while and know exactly how to rope in a gringo. Not to mention, when you're an absentee owner, which most of these people are, counting on a management company to rent and maintain those places often does not end well. Over the years, I can't count how many stories I've heard like this, and most of them involve absentee gringo owners and landlords. That's why you have to be down here with boots on the ground monitoring every aspect of whatever deal you're about to get into. But now is not the time to get into real estate unless you find a very desperate seller. It's definitely a renter's market, so take advantage of that and wait it out. Be patient, hold on to your cash, your time will come. Believe me, there are no once-in-a-lifetime real estate deals that people are talking about at cocktail parties or gringo bars. And by the way, why would you want to get in at the top of a huge real estate bubble anyway? Yet, believe it or not, I still see clueless gringos buying in. I guess it's all about the fact that fresh gringos with the rose-colored glasses in paradise are so overly optimistic they're susceptible to all kinds of real estate pitches. Again, don't get sucked in. There are no deals out there. Okay, now let's talk about Argentina for a second. You know, they elected a new president. The outgoing president, Cristina Fernandez Kirchner, who tripled government spending and doubled government bureaucracy in her 2 terms in office. You've surely seen her sulking in the press lately since her hand-picked guy for president lost. In Argentina, you can't be president for more than 2 consecutive terms. Thank God. Meanwhile, Argentina heads towards massive inflation and nobody wants the Argentine peso anymore. In fact, just this week, Air Canada and American Airlines stated they will no longer take the Argentine peso as payment for air travel. They'll take dollars and euros and Chilean and Colombian pesos, as well as Guatemalan quetzales and Honduran lempiras, but they will not take Argentine pesos. Yes, Argentina is really a banana republic again. Now, if you occasionally fly down to Latin America, you probably have taken Copa Airlines, C-O-P-A. Copa is the Panama flagship airline, and it almost got wiped out this last year by the collapse of the Venezuelan Bolivar. They lost $427 million. So, not wanting to get burned twice, they refused to accept Argentine pesos. Okay, time to change gears again. December 7th, just a couple days ago, was Dia del Diablo. So, what's that all about? Well, you'll see, as you drive down most any Latin American street, little kiosks that have just sprung up overnight, they weren't there before, selling papier-mâché devils that you burn on the 7th of December. The smallest ones, about the size of a koala bear, are around $2. Then you've got the big, giant-sized, nasty, ugly devils, about the size of old vomit, and they run about $5 or $6. Then at 6 p.m. sharp on December 7th, everyone gathers with their devils outside their front door. They light off every conceivable type of firework and light the devils up too. So, what's the purpose of all that? Well, as the tradition goes, when you burn your devil, you've eliminated all the sins and dirty deeds committed in your household over the past year, and now you're starting with a fresh slate. Which doesn't really make sense to me, because when burning the devil, you're giving him exactly the correct environment he thrives in. Fire. The devil and fire, like water and chocolate, right? And I've tried to explain that to a few Latins, but they just don't get it. They give me the deer in the headlights look. I guess tradition's tradition. Now, speaking of chicken buses, I know, you're wondering, where'd that come from? Well, it seems people are always talking about chicken buses. They're everywhere. Newly arrived gringos say they want to take just one ride in one of those things because they want a photo op. When you're driving behind one, you usually curse because they're belching smoke and soot and laying on the horn. I can tell you it's never a pleasant experience driving next to or near one of them. But you know, every so often you'll be driving past a chicken bus and you'll notice a big black bow hanging from the side of it or up in the windshield. That means the most recent driver has been killed. Now, you longtime listeners will know in a past show I mentioned that one of the most dangerous jobs in all of Latin America is a chicken bus driver. Yes, it's true, they get held up regularly and are victims of extortion rings. But the fact is, chicken bus drivers are real dyed-in-the-wool cowboys. They get drunk, they get in fights, they get shot at, They drive crazy, they pass on blind curves, and pull some incredibly dangerous stuff behind the wheel. Which is why they go over bridges, crash into power poles, and flip regularly. Which is why you'll occasionally see a big black bow on a chicken bus. Oh, and by the way, when you're driving your own car, you don't want to get into a fender bender with a chicken bus. Not that the chicken bus driver or his helpers or the people riding that bus will get mad at you. They don't. They're very cordial, even when you get in an accident. But you see, a chicken bus is heavy metal, so your car is going to always get the worst of it, and you'll never get financial compensation. And it's true, 99.9% of the time, it's the chicken bus driver's fault when there's an accident. Which is why when a chicken bus gets in a serious accident when people are thrown out or killed, most often the chicken bus driver will just run from the accident, never to be seen again. But where was I? Oh yeah, black bow on a chicken bus? Dead previous driver. So then, how many times have I personally seen something like that? Well, I saw one just yesterday. Oh, and you know what else I saw yesterday? I was in a big Latin supermarket, and I noticed, once again, the gringo advantage alive and well. Although some might say it's the gringo disadvantage this time. Now, do note that almost all the big food manufacturing companies up in the States are down here in Latin America. They've got their branches down here cranking out ketchup and mustard and cornflakes, you name it. They've moved their factories down here because, well, cheap labor and closer to point of sale. So what's that got to do with the gringo advantage? Well, next time you're in Latin America and you're in the supermarket, go to the ketchup and mustard aisle. You'll see Hellman's, get this, American-style mustard, and Heinz and Hunt's American-style ketchup, not to mention American-style soy sauce. Didn't even know there was such a thing, did you? American-style vinegar, green beans, American-style, well, all kinds of things. You know, for gringo wannabes, everything American-style is better. Why not put it on your food products? It's American-style, so hey, the Latins will love it. And here's one that takes the cake. It's a bottle of hot sauce, chili, and it says, New York-style chili. You New Yorkers up there, you ever hear of that one? You have your own special chili up there? Maybe New York-style pizza or New York-style cheesecake. Oh, but that goes for the processed meat aisle, too. They've got American-style hot dogs, American-style ham, American-style bacon, bologna, you name it. It's American-style. And, of course, these companies are not marketing to gringos. I'm usually the only gringo in the store. I'm off the tourist trail, you know. They can't be marketing to me. They're marketing to the gringo wannabes. And, by the way, for those of you who are a bit confused when Latins use the word American, they, of course, are Latin Americans, but they use the word American to mean the U.S. and Canada, though technically they are Americans too. Even though when you look at a map, it says South America, Central America, Mesoamerica. So there is a conundrum there. In fact, often a Latin will say to me on the street, are you an Americano? And of course, they're really Americanos of a different sort, though they don't see it that way. So there's no such thing as Central American-style ketchup or South American-styled mustard. It's simply American-style, meaning gringo-style. Which is why when you come down here to Latin America, you'll find there's a big chain of little donut kiosks everywhere called American Donuts. I always understood a donut is a donut, you know? They don't have South American, Central American, or Mesoamerican donuts, so why would they call them simply American Donuts? To make gringo wannabes believe it's a transplanted U.S. item, of course. Though it's not. Only well-targeted marketing. Oh, and by the way, the Dunkin' Donuts franchise has invaded down here, too. And from what I understand, the American Donut franchise chain, which is a strictly Latin franchise, is doing much better. Why? The word Dunkin' means nothing to the average Latin person. In fact, the average worker at Dunkin' Donuts doesn't even know what the word Dunkin' means. And how do I know that? Why, I'm the guy who asks all those stupid questions. That's my job, right? And the response I get is always, no say, which means, I don't know. Now that's in contrast to when you speak to an employee of the American Donuts franchise. They do actually think they're selling a first world U.S. product. And of course they're not, but who am I to dissuade them of that little fantasy? Bottom line, for better or for worse, the gringo advantage rides again. Now, on a completely different subject, for those of you who are thinking of coming down here and buying a car or driving around and who might be worried about what could happen if you got a ticket, Let me read from a little article on page 14 of a big Latin American newspaper. It says, attention, if you have any moving or stationary traffic violations going back to the year 2012, pay them by January 1st, 2016, and you will receive a 50% reduction. Then it says, if you have any traffic violations from 2013 or 14, pay them by January 1st and get a 25% exoneration. Now, think about that for a minute. What does that mean to you? If you get a ticket in Latin America, chances are, if you wait long enough, years even, you'll get a nice discount on the fine. The longer you wait, the bigger the discount, too. Very strange, huh? What's even more strange is that, if you think about it, a person who hasn't paid his moving or stationary violations in 4 years somehow can still be driving around legally. Now, in the States, you get a couple months behind on a moving violation fine, or how about 6 months or a year? Then you tell me what happens. They'll not only nail you with a huge fine, they'll probably put a warrant out on you. Now note, in some big Latin cities over, let's say, 1 million population, they have their local transit police department hooked into the computers so that when you renew your car license plate every year, not your personal driver's license, your car plate, they won't let you renew it unless you pay up. But that's only if you're living in a pretty big city and you get a ticket in that city. However, if you get a ticket in a smaller town, and there could be 50 or 100 different municipalities, they're generally not hooked up to the central database. So if you get a ticket in another municipality, it just won't show up when you renew your car license. So outlying municipalities will run little discounts like this every once in a while to try to suck in some late payers. So down here right now, it's a lot like it was up in the States many years ago, when you could get a ticket in one state and it would never show up on the books in another. Back then, there was no sharing of data, no reciprocity. Those were the days, huh? Well, it's still like that down here in Latin America, off the gringo tourist trail anyway. Oh, and by the way, if you get a ticket or a fine, it's about 1/5 the cost of what you pay up in the States. That said, we're getting to the end, so it's time to mention my Latin Insider Seminar coming up January 2016, just about a month away now. You can still sign up. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on the seminar link. And don't forget to check out that website, www.thenewexpat.com, for all kinds of great information and blogs. And don't forget my new YouTube channel, where you can follow the photos that go along with the audio. And don't forget to subscribe. It's free, you know.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.